Hello?
Hello?
Carl?
Yes, sir.
Sorry I missed you. How you get along?
I'm doing fine. I tried to call you last night, but they told me you'd retired, and I understood that, so I thought I'd better at least...
Well, gosh, I didn't know that. I was up Camp David, and I did. I'll tell you what I did. I don't want to buy an ad and run this, but I stayed in bed yesterday morning till about 11 o'clock. I didn't go to church. I got up, went and bowled one game, and came back and had a bowl of soup, went to bed, and just catnapped all afternoon. I got up and had my dinner and had another bowl of soup. I'm getting too fat. And I went back in and I went to bed, and I slept till about 3:30, 4 o'clock, and then I waked up and couldn't go back to sleep. But I'd slept all day, Sunday, all day.
Well, I know you feel better today, at least.
I sure do, sure do.
What I told you about...
I got Jake's note. He's...
I wanted to prize you, because I felt like later on you might say to me when I call, by God, why didn't you tell me what was happening? And here's the story, and I'll just give it to you briefly in a nutshell. Now, of course, Ernie Vandiver got back out on the stump and started having angina pains and decided he was going to pull out. I'm giving you the sequence of events so you can properly appreciate it. First place, he called Herman Talmadge before he called anybody. That includes me or anybody else. Herman told him, according to what Vandiver says, come on up to Washington and I want to talk with you. And he did, and he got up there and he told him, said, look, if you're going to pull out of this thing and your doctor says you're going to be a corpse if you don't pull out of it, I'm going to come back and run. I'll take over your organization and I'll make the race. He then prepared, Mr. President, over the weekend, a television appearance, radio, newspaper things, in which he said flat-footedly and unequivocally that he felt like he could best serve his state as governor, that his power was diluted 100 times in the Senate, and that he preferred to be governor, and that he was ready to come home and serve, and he announced, subject only to the fact that he said he would like for the people to respond to his announcement. Well, the response, he called me then and others and read us the statement and said, this is my statement, this is what I'm going to do. Naturally, I said, great, that's what you're going to do. We're going to do everything down here. So we got to work, and the response and all to his announcement was terrific. In the meantime, however, or I should say within 24, 48 hours, he began to recant. And he did so. Why he did so, I will never know, nor will anyone else ever know. But when I kept in communication with him practically every morning, and when I began to see he was vacillating, then I began to worry a little bit in my own mind as to what this was going to do to the party and what it was going to do to him and what it was going to do to everybody. So as he began to give me this double talk about long-range view and short-range view and that sort of business, I finally made up my mind that he was backing out. And so I proceeded to start trying to come up with something that would everybody could rally around. Well, now, you are somewhat familiar with the political situation in this state, but briefly bring you back up to date. We've got an agricultural commissioner, Campbell. We've got a comptroller, General Jimmy Bentley, who was Herman's executive secretary at one time. And we've got a lieutenant governor, Peter Zagier, who was also extremely close to Herman. All three of these candidates, within 24 hours after Herman began to back up, made a pass at the governor's office. Every one of them checked up short, way short. I mean, they checked up not only in the books of everybody else, but in their own books, and they found this out, although for years they had been, traveling on the premise that when the opportunity came, they would be able to step in and pick up the chips. Well, when they found out that they didn't have a Chinaman's chance, they all ran back into their little holes and said, this is what we're going to run for, this is where we stay. I then got Bob Woodruff, and I got Mr. John Sibley, and I got Mills Lane, and some of the others who normally have a lot to do with financing these campaigns, and I started trying to pick a couple of people who at least everybody could solidify behind. I came up with Bill Bowden, who was the vice chairman of the Trust Company of Georgia, and he wanted to run. He'd been making speeches for 10 to 12 years about businessmen sacrificing and getting into government, but as usual, as you and I both know, when the chips are finally down and a man has to finally make the decision himself and go, there are not many people who've got enough intestinal fortitude to do anything, particularly if they think they're going to have a battle. So Bowden, yesterday afternoon, finally made a decision that his career was going to be business. Well, now that leaves us in this situation. Herman told me this morning at 9 o'clock, and I called him yesterday before he ever did this and said, look, Herman, if you are not going to run, you got this thing into the mess it's in. Left field's so messed up now, nobody can play it. And I said, for God's sakes, don't go out here and make a statement that you're out until at least some folks can rally around. And he said, well, Governor, I've already sent my statement to the press, and it'll be released in the morning at 9 o'clock, and I can't cancel it now. So that was that. So this morning at 9 o'clock, he made that statement. Well, now, the way the thing stacks up is this. Ellis Arnold, of course, is still in the primary. He's a former governor. You know him, I'm sure, and he's a man who has a great deal of forensic ability. But actually, from the standpoint of his political stripe and his philosophy right now, in a race with Bo Calloway and in a race with between the two in the November election, and I'm just talking to you, in my opinion, it's going to be a massacre. And unfortunately, this is where we stand. Now, Herman has done more in the last two or three days to build up the Republican Party by getting in and now flip-flopping and getting out. He's done more to build them up for a sweep than he could have done in 20 years by doing that. Mm-hmm. In my frank opinion, and I called a congressman last night and got them out of bed and apprised them, and I say this to you sincerely, in my frank opinion, and of course I cannot succeed myself, I think I could either easily get reelected governor now, or I think I could whip Bo Calloway in a confrontation on any level. But I'm out of the ball game. I'm on my way out, and my only purpose is, of course, to keep the Democratic Party intact, and I'm going to fight for the party right down the line, like I did in 64. But I told these guys 2.5 years ago when they were running around hiding that if they'd stand together, that we might have overcome that 86,000 votes, and we wouldn't have this thing hanging on their neck today. But hell no, they had to go out and hide in the bushes and go to foreign countries and everything else and just let the state go to hell. So now we're in this position. In my opinion, the Republicans are going to develop the first time in this history, they're going to have a GOP primary. And they not only going to run for governor, but they're going to have a candidate for every seat in Congress. They're going to have a candidate for every seat they can in the legislature. They're going to have a candidate for every state house office. And I believe today, as things stand, you lose four to five congressmen. I think you'll lose 60 to 70 legislators, and I think three or four of these state house offices may go down the drain too. And this is the situation they're in, and of course, I don't know why Herman thinks that by 68, with a Republican governor sitting in here, that he's going to be in any better position, because I think he's dead now. He's torn his shirt from hell to breakfast, and it's so far as the state and everything else is concerned, I've never seen a man politically make a colossus blunder like he's made, and he made it on his own. He thought about it, deliberated about it, made this thing, and then just backed out of it. And I just thought you ought to be apprised of what was happening down here, where at least you wouldn't say to me later on that call, I depend on you to let me know what's going on, and you didn't tell me this thing was happening.
Well, it sure is distressing to hear that. I haven't ever talked to him about it or anybody else. I saw in the papers, and I just assumed maybe all of the thing worked out, and he'd run for governor, and you'd come up here and take his place, and I thought it was going to be a good thing. I guess that this does endanger folks, though, like Davis and probably Hagen and
Bob Stevens, Jack Flint. It'll endanger all of those. Possibly Jimmy Mackey out here in the cab.
Well, it's distressing. It's distressing. Who has the best possibility of getting in now? The Democrats. Anybody? You say all those state officers declined it, huh?
Well, they can't make it. Yeah, they all. I'm just talking to you, but as I say, they spent 3 or 4 years. You know, I've been fortunate enough to run the state adequately, and we're winding up with the greatest surplus we ever had. We spent more money. The people are happier than they've ever been. I'm in the greatest shape I've ever been in. But these same little guys are the ones who've been sitting around here, you know, sticking a needle whenever they could in me and things like that. When I'm ready to join hands with any of them and help them. But when the time came and the opportunity was there and laid in their lap, by God, they're all chicken, and they all now realize that actually they can't win. And frankly, when you talk about a fellow like Bentley or Phil Campbell or Peter Zagier, Mr. President, I'm being honest with you, they're just not attractive candidates when you compare them with Callaway. They just look like old second-rate horses running against a pretty good-looking horse. It never has been on the track, but who's got some good speed and who's gonna run like hell if somebody don't hobble him somewhere. The pitiful part about it is that the other fellow over here was gonna give birth to this thing, and he's the one that got it all pregnant. And now we've had the damnedest abortion you've ever seen.
What do you reckon changed his mind?
I have no idea. I know that Harley Branch and a few of those of the Southern Company were immediately in the office, and I think they and some others naturally told him, look, you got 10 years of seniority. You've been up here. You've got a chance of being the number two man on the finance committee in the next few years, et cetera. So far as the government's concerned, the state power is diminishing. The federal government power is increasing. By God, you stay up here.
Who was ahead of him? Long and Smathers? And
I think there's only one or two ahead of him on finance. But he should have thought about that when he was considering this thing for two or three days, and when he never should have. You don't put yourself out on the platform and dive, and then halfway in midair try to get back on the board somewhere.
What does he say in his announcement? What's the reason?
Well, I think he just said, I haven't read that. I get it in one.
No.
One second. He just saying that
decided not to
mature deliberation and all that kind of baloney, that he decided he can best serve his state. But he didn't even leave the door cracked in his announcement last week. I mean, I don't know whether you read it, but he didn't even leave it ajar. He just said flat-footedly and went into the reasons why the Senate's diluted. He was only one of 100, and he had, after very mature deliberation, he had come to the conclusion he could best serve his state as governor rather than senator. Well, you don't make those kind of statements, I don't believe, in politics, and then try to figure out some way to say that I didn't say it when you put it on TV, radio, and everything else.
Well, it's real distressing, Carl. I sure do appreciate you calling me. I'll think about it. If you think of anything I can or should do, let me know. I never talked to him about it. I saw the paper where they said I framed up with him, McCalloway did, but I never discussed it with him. He and Russell and this little girl, little sick girl, and Congressman Davis came in, and when they got ready, she left, and Russell said that he would like, on behalf of the Southern senators, to present me a letter.
Yeah.
And he presented me a letter on civil rights administration of the educational bill.
Right.
And it's signed by all seven letters. But that is before Vandenberg made his decision.
Right.
But Callaway charged that I had arranged it. I just kept quiet, didn't say anything, because I didn't think y'all would be mixing in local.
Now, I didn't call you to tell you pull anybody's chestnuts out.
No, I know that.
As a friend.
I sure know that, Carl, and I appreciate it. I understand that, but I would like to if I knew how to do it. I would sure like to see the Democrats do it. But
it concerns me, and I'm sure it concerns you, that if it's contagious, it could have contagious effects in others.
Oh, it sure could. It's going to be in Alabama, and it's going to do it in others. And it's real bad, and the war thing's going to get worse.